This morning I'm going to deviate a little from my normal preaching pattern. It's always good to deviate. I'm going to be telling two stories this morning. One is a story from the recent past, and one is from further back. So I hope you enjoy these stories. Imagine we're in, I don't know, a coffee klatch somewhere, and I'm telling you a story, and I have a red and white sweater on, and I'm smoking a pipe. My soul magnifies God. What a wonderful way of putting faith. What a wonderful perspective to faith, giving one a sense of wideness and not diminishment, of growth and not narrowness. My soul magnifies God, Mary said. Now, there would have been no knowledge of genetics or biology, the stuff of life. There would have been no knowledge of DNA back then. Bringing forth new life would have been miraculous. And is it less so now? With all that we have uncovered, the whole process seems more, not less, miraculous. But I did not come here today to speak about birth. Or at least I want to speak to you about it in a different way, or a couple of different ways this morning. I want to tell you two stories. Now, I heard somewhere that the more you tell a story, the more degraded it becomes. Factually, I mean. It's like taking a beloved but fragile Christmas ornament out of a box and turning it over in your hands. You damage it every time. But I am getting older now, and these stories are for today. At least, I think so. And anyway, stories are meant to be shared and mined for their gold, if there is any in them. I let you be the judge. These are both true stories, and I ask permission to share them, especially the first, because it's time to tell this story. And it is right to do so. The first story is called A Lady in Red. Her name was Jane Boynton Strickland, and she was wrapped, swaddled, in many layers every time I saw her, always a red last layer, the same blanket on top of quilts, on top of coats, whether morning or evening, whether winter or summer, almost as if she could never be warm enough or protected enough. She had short, dark hair cropped close to her face, an aquiline, delicate nose, enormous hazel eyes, and the faintest hint of freckles that deepened depending on the season. She came seeking help and a listening ear. Luckily, I could do both moderately well. I heard some of her story, but I never heard all of it. The bits and pieces shared seemed to be pulled from her, painful, and yet somehow pleased to tell them. Burden a little less burdensome for a time. She came to church some, and she sat in the front, inviting and brooking no interaction and no eye contact. Some folks tried, but she rebuffed any advances. And sometimes she lashed out in words and invective. I have no idea of her age. It was probably somewhere close to mine. She was a tough lady to like, but I admired her. Her tenacity to keep on keeping on, her pride and her insistence through her obvious mental and physical health challenge, insistence that she be heard and she be seen. I never knew where she lived. She would not let me know. I did know she was housed, at least for the most part. I knew she had no family she would speak about. And she would come and go, and months would go by without a visit, and then she would appear, swaddled in that red blanket. And over time, I was so happy to see her, to see that she still persevered, that she still yet lived. And one Sunday, much like this Sunday close to Christmas, when I was to baptize a child, a young one of about 6 months old, she came to church and handed me an old, tattered grocery plastic bag and said, "Give that child," pointing to the family standing in the church, waiting to run through the service of where to sit and when to respond. "Give that child this." I made it. And don't worry, I cleaned it so it doesn't have any fleas. And then she sat in that front pew, looking for all the world like a fish out of water, like a player from a Dickens Christmas Carol. And I pulled out of that tattered, many times used plastic bag, first a card that is reproduced on your bulletin, and I carry this everywhere I go. She drew it. And then I drew out the most exquisitely knitted rose white baptism blanket, soft and scalloped edge, with an intricate design and plenty ample to swaddle a child. When I wrapped that baby in that blanket, I saw Jane crack a smile, a genuine smile. A not, "Why do I have to explain all this to you again" type of smile, or a "just give me help and stop talking" kind of smile, but a smile that reached her eyes, and her soul magnified God, and her spirit rejoiced, and everyone in that place did, right along with her that day. There is so much we need to tend to, so much that needs to change. And so many young people, I am so grateful that for this, who are showing us the way. But just for now, just for this morning, maybe Jane Boynton Strickland, may she magnify God for you this morning and give us all the courage to love kindness. And the second story I want to share with you this morning is called a Northern Advent story. It too speaks of rejoicing and souls magnifying God, but just in a little bit of a different way. "Are we there yet?" someone yelled from the back of the station wagon, and it was a long way back from the front to the back in those old station wagons. She had to yell twice. "Not far now," was the answer. It had been a long drive, even with chains on the tires. Remember those chains on the tires we had to get out and push at times? Snowplows weren't very plentiful in those days, but the snow sure was. And then the lane had to be shoveled, and the car had to be unpacked, and the fire started. We had electricity, just. Dad had paid for the 14 poles to be brought in on the side road from the next farm. Dad headed out into the woods with a few of us. Snowshoes on feet and an axe over shoulder. "Shut the door tight," Mum yelled, as she always did. Our door was notorious for not wanting to close snug. They came back 2 hours later with a blue spruce from the woods over the hill past the pond, soaked through to the skin from sweating, from dragging that tree and walking in the deep snow. Tree got decked, and we got fed. Tortiere, of course. And then we strapped on the big old snowshoes with gut for traces and took our yearly Christmas Eve tramp. The night was cold, and the stars were bright, and each breath hung noticeable in the air. There is nothing as silent as the silent night of snow-covered fields, of snow tamped down by the carpet of white. We trudge single file, easier to walk in another's path. The sky and all its lights seem to bend down close to the white. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. It was a dark, full of light, if that makes some sense. And we gradually grew silent as we made our tramp. And all these years later, I can hear the absence of sound and taste the moisture-laden cold and feel that full to bursting that a wide-open landscape gives. Senses sharper, edges crisper, frames of each breath magnified. A dark full of light. And suddenly, there was a flash of red against the white of the snow, and right behind it was a brown, red, more substantial four-legged flash against the white of the snow, and there was a pounce and a shake and a bounding off tail in hair, air, limp, red, stark against the white, into the wood and out of sight. A fox had got a cardinal. And it happened so fast, there was no time to do anything but stop in our tracks. Now, Dad, being Dad, spoke of the life cycle, of the web of life, that everything dies, even me and you, he said. And Mum, being Mum, spoke of the need to feed one's young. And some of us whimpered, and the older ones scoffed and called us babies, told us to grow up. But every last one of us was quiet all the way back to the farmhouse. Mum even forgot to yell about the door. And then the stockings were hung by the stovepipe and the table set for breakfast, because you always had to eat breakfast before unwrapping, a rule my sister said God made. Dad told the two stories we always had at Christmas, the Nativity and 'Twas the Night Before Christmas by Clement Moore, which we could all recite by heart, except the youngest, because he couldn't yet talk. Bed and prayers tonight about birds and foxes jumbled up with baby Jesus and Santa and keeping everyone safe. Warm bed, warm hug, warm stovepipe up through the chimney in the corner of my room. I was first up and down the stairs in the morning, avoiding the 7th and 10th that creaked. I opened the door at the bottom. All farmhouses had doors between floors. And I heard a noise coming from the next room. I walked toe-heel as quiet as I could and was stopped in my tracks. There, perched in the blue spruce, about halfway up, was a cardinal, a brilliant red against the green, and that cardinal was singing, and it sure sounded like joy to me, like greeting the light of the new each day morning. Whatever it was, that cardinal, that red against green, made music for my ears and was miraculous in my eyes. And looking back over the years from then to right here and right now, from the red on white to the red on green and everything that came in between, it was right then that I began to understand Mary's words about her soul magnifying God and her spirit rejoicing in God, her words about consenting to bear God, consenting to bear life then and now. Mary, in all your disguises, thank you. May we each have the courage and recognize our capacity to seek justice, to love kindness, and walk humbly with God this Advent season. Amen.